Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixel Chicken Team Up. I am your host, Stryker, and with me I have Phil.
Ow.
Oh, my God.
And I have Johnny.
Yeah.
Phil, I'm sorry for slapping you just now.
Okay.
Do you forgive me?
I forgive you.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
Good.
Doing awesome.
Cheek's a little red.
Mm-hmm. No, it's fine. I've slapped him harder. And he's slapped me harder.
Prove it.
No. Phil, tell me how you're doing.
I'm doing good.
What's up with you?
Doing awesome.
What's going on in your life since last week? Last week was pretty hard on you. We were hot and sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
Things got weird.
We touched each other.
Yeah, that didn't happen. Don't believe that. But things are cool. Things are cool. Played Batman Arkham Knight. Gonna finish that up, and then I'm finally gonna finish The Witcher 3.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, let me, so what you and I are both in the same place so far, without giving away spoilers for Arkham Knight, where we finished the main part of the story, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is cool, so we're now doing other things in that game. You also saw a movie, which we'll be talking about a little bit later.
Yes.
What did you see?
I saw Terminator Genesis, and it sucked.
Okay. Is that your review, or do you want to talk more about it?
No, I'm going to talk more about it, because there are cool... It's a sucky movie with some parts in it that I think are cool.
Those are the worst kind.
Yeah, because it's like, there's so much stuff in here that go to waste, because everything else is so bad.
I would rather have a movie suck all the way through, so I just don't have any hope for it in my mind, where I'm like, you know, it could have been good if blah, 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 blah. I'd rather have it just suck. So I'm just like, that movie had no chance in hell.
Yeah.
It sucked. And I hate it. And it shouldn't have existed.
Yeah.
Anyway. Johnny. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm tired. I want to take a nap.
You can do that while we're on the air. Phil and I will carry on. And every once in a while, we'll ask you something and just kind of poke at you. So you're like...
If I start snoring, you can like dunk me.
I'm not tired.
You can dunk me.
I'm going to go read comics. I gave into the temptation and bought two comic book collections, Image comic book collections for $20, which is a really good deal.
What are these comics?
They're image books.
But what image? Like just random Image comics?
No, they're like collections, like you know, from Barnes and Noble, and one of them is called Low, which is basically kind of a post-apocalyptic thing, but the art is beautiful, and the other is just like, it's just off the hook and trippy and weird, but I can't wait to read them.
Speaking of off the hook and trippy and weird,
kind of like a Matt Fraction doing a retelling of the Odyssey. So
damn it, I wanted to do the transition. Wait, a math blaster retelling of the Odyssey?
Matt Fraction, but do the transition, man. It's okay, do the transition.
Matt Hazard?
That's what I was thinking.
I started watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure the other day.
Oh, man.
Are you familiar with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure?
No.
Do you know anything about it?
No, nothing.
Have you heard of it?
No, what is it?
What? Okay, so it's...
Really? You never heard of it?
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, no.
It is a manga series that's like a shonen, Dragon Ball kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It started in 1987 or something. So it's been going on for a long time. It's still going. He's still drawing
the
manga.
Okay, so you've told me about this a couple weeks ago. You told me about something that's been going on since the 80s in some anime series. Is that Berserk?
It was different.
That was Berserk.
It was Berserk, yeah.
Okay, keep going.
So this one, it's got like over 1,000 chapters, which if you think about it, One Piece has 800 and some, and they've been going since 1999, so it could be crazier. But, yeah, it's like a multi-generational epic, bizarre, fittingly. They just started making an anime out of it, even though it's been going since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting. Anyways, Capcom made fighting games out of it in the early 2000s.
Okay.
That were somewhat popular and pretty good. Stryker, have you played any of them?
Yeah. I played the one of the 2D fighters, one of the 2D JoJo's. I played like a ROM of it because I'd heard about it and seen it back before. I didn't even know about the manga or anime or anything back when I played. I just knew it as a fighting game.
Most Westerners did not.
Yeah.
Until the fighting game was introduced.
It
was
so. That's, I you know, I don't remember it all that much. I only played it a little bit, but I did play it, yeah.
Yeah, they had it as Shoryuken League, but yeah, so there's some fighters based out of it, but yeah, it's a really weird series that's like, there's the recent game that you still have that I brought from Japan, All-Star Battle.
Yeah, you want that?
kind of, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I already traded that, man. I didn't want to wait for it to lose its value.
Oh, you traded it in.
Yeah, I traded that in.
They're like, oh,
a year ago.
The GameStop employees are like, what is this language? All right. But yeah, it's interesting. The series takes place over, like, it's like Metal Gear, where it takes place over generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, like, the main character is JoJo, like, Jonathan Joestar, someone Joestar every time. And the first two letters of the first name is Joe. So it's like Jotaro Joestar, Jonathan, whatever. And so, like, the first one, I didn't know this. This is, like, a twist. It starts in, like, the 1800s, and I'm watching the show. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know it was that old until I looked it up later, and it's huge in Japan. And, like, I'm watching it, and I get to episode 9, and the main character fucking dies. JoJo dies. I'm like, what? And I look, I'm like, oh, Jesus, there's 8 JoJos.
Oh.
There's each JoJo is its own series. And when they pass on to the next one, it's like...
So does he have a son named JoJo? Or
In one way or another.
Coincidentally, like, his name's JoJo.
Usually there is some adopted child due to some tragedy. Like, so at the very end, there's just this baby on a ship, and the surviving wife that he just married takes the baby and becomes the next JoJo. But... Yeah, so, like, there's, like, a time skip and a totally different cast, and it's, like, there's this vampire guy who's, like, immortal, and he's just going across generations. It's very interesting, but it's absolutely insane. The guy who designs all of, like, the, like, fighting moves and everything, it's, like, genius, but so stupid at the same time. Like, you have to be a genius to think of fighting moves this stupid, mm-hmm. but, like, so it's really creative and just... It's funny. Like, it's known for its poses that are impossible. Like, they're constantly, like, giving a sweet monologue, and they're like... And they're like, you know, they're, like, angled in a way where they couldn't even stand because their like, limbs are so, like...
Super mega fighting cup nerd!
Like, they're just, like, talking about their moral values. They're just, like, at, like, 9 people are in this pretzel pose. It's amazing.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, that's JoJo.
I still remember the scene from the anime where he's, like, one of the characters, like, flipping his tongue around.
He's looking like a cherry candy.
God, it was...
He does that through, like, the whole, like, whenever he's in a scene. It's not like it was one bit. It's just this guy with, like, this really long face, and he's, like, a good guy, and he's got this incredibly long tongue, and he's got, like, this cherry candy... And he's just, like, licking it and flipping it and doing tricks with his tongue. That's just his tongue's, like, really long. And he's just making... every single time. It's like, he's not a villain. He's just... This show makes no fucking sense.
They must have some pretty powerful weed in Japan.
No, they're not allowed to have any weed in Japan. Oh. They just like heroin.
Oh, okay, so it's that. That's what does it.
So, other pieces of news. So... anyway, we've been talking a lot about Batman over the course of mm-hmm. the last few months.
Still haven't played it anymore.
So another game that's for another superhero. There was like a GIF that was released, and then a leak supposedly that the Arkham Origins devs mm-hmm. were working on. Now they are confirmed to be working on some sort of open world game.
Okay.
What that means, nobody knows.
Did they say anything about DC or?
No, just an open world game. That's all that they've said. Arkham Origins, and that is confirmed.
Who made Arkham Origins?
Did they
do anything else?
Yes, they have. I'll have to look them up, but.
I can do that. Keep talking.
So there was a leak that there may be a new Superman game in the works. there was a the report came out, and then there was like a picture and a small little GIF that's supposed to be of the screen where you were like selecting his skin or something like that, and it looked very comic booky and stuff. And there's you can't really tell anything from it. I mean, he just like looks down.
Splash damage.
But that's yeah, splash damage. But that's pretty much it. So. Whether or not that is true that's what they're working on. To tell you the truth, I wouldn't be too surprised if some developer is working on a Superman game just because it's an IP that at the moment is in the public eye.
Yeah.
So I mean it makes sense, and there's never been other than like back on like the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis.
And also on Xbox. Don't forget Xbox.
Well, I'm saying good Superman games.
Well, the 64 game was good.
No, the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis game was good.
Okay.
The Nintendo 64 game was barely a game.
I can't remember if I played the Super Nintendo game.
It was just a beat-em-up. It was Death. Yeah. It was Death of Superman. It was cool. It's a fun game. It's hard to mess up a beat-em-up.
But, yeah.
You know, it was cool. But so my question about this, like, Phil, as far as a Superman game goes, to me, I don't see what's so hard to make, how it's so hard to make a good Superman game, because there's so much
possibilities that can come with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, you could just make it like the Arkham games, but with flying and, like, more aerial-type combat, mm-hmm. and maybe, like, a mixture of, like, the Hulk Ultimate, like, yeah. prototype, maybe that kind of mm-hmm. gameplay as well. A lot of destruction and stuff like that. So
I just feel like the passion and budget just isn't in that setting or that property. I mean, and I like Superman, but I know far more people that hate him or just aren't interested in playing a Superman game. If they made a Superman game that was half as good as Arkham Knight, I don't think it would sell.
I disagree completely with that. It would sell.
I believe in it. I'd want it to succeed, you know, and...
Why would it sell more than Batman? Batman blows it away in terms of popularity. Now it does.
Superman, I mean, it's a popular superhero. If they made a good Superman game, a good one, I have...
And you also have to understand there's people who really wouldn't care to read a Batman comic book, or probably not even Batman fans that would still enjoy the Batman games. So who's to say it would be any different for someone who's not a Superman fan to realize, okay, this is a good game.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that aren't really Batman fans that like the Arkham games. It's just a good game. I mean, and I think that a Superman game would sell well. But if they made a Superman game, what kind of... So those are, like, my examples of something I think of when I think of, like, what a good Superman game could be, like, mm-hmm. gameplay-wise. What do you think?
You certainly wouldn't want to make it too easy. You know, you could just punch someone's head off the first hook you throw. But at the same
time, that's a good point.
At the same time, there would be a sort of like a, well, isn't he Superman? I mean, you know, how strong is he really? You know, you don't want him
to be just indestructible.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you don't want him to be like too weak, you want to be able to really use what Superman can do, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want the same kind of combat. It wouldn't work the same way that it would work with Batman, where Batman is kind of doing backflips and karate moves. That's not what Superman does, so...
Superman's much more aerial and...
So, more aerial combat, you know, more monster fights.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, aliens, robots. Monsters, robots.
You things, know, that kind of stuff.
That's what I would mm-hmm. like to see, like, in like just more epic scale.
Yes.
Like, throwing guys through a fucking mountain.
Yeah.
Things like that.
That would be cool.
Well, I mean, and I just don't know, because splash damage kind of sucks. They made Brink. Great game. They made Enemy Territory... Like, their pedigree...
Enemy Territory, what's that?
Quake Wars and Wolfenstein.
Quake Wars.
Both of which were fine, interesting, you know, multiplayer things, but they...
Wait, which know. Wolfenstein?
Wolfenstein Enemy Territory.
Oh. I didn't know that was a thing. Okay.
It was the first Enemy Territory in 2003. But, yeah, so that was their first thing. And then they moved on to Batman Arkham Origins, which is just literally them working with the tool set of a previous engine, having flying and giant monsters and stuff like that. Sounds pretty daunting for a studio that hasn't really proven themselves. And they're making something right now called Dirty Bomb, which is a silly name.
Yeah, they haven't. They don't have quite the pedigree to back it up, but
oh, they're making a free to play Nexon MMO.
But I'm willing to give them, you know, the benefit of the doubt until I see, till I see it and or play it and it sucks. But I just think it would be cool. I think that a good Superman game is. It's just
what people would need. It's what Superman would need to win people over.
Yeah, but well, okay. So the Batman New 52, like new era of Batman, has got a lot of fans. Right? Mm-hmm. It could just be my world of what I've seen, but mm-hmm. I haven't heard anything about like the new era of Superman since the Death and Rebirth fiasco. Mm,
it's pretty. There's been more.
There's more criticism of the New 52 Batman.
Yeah, but then you have to also take into account before the New 52, there was a lot of great Superman stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, Superman, arguably, like a lot of different stories from Superman in the early to mid 2000s were some of the best stories mm-hmm. for DC. I mean, there was a lot of great stories, but there was a lot of really good Superman stories, and I don't think that his. Superman is a timeless character, and I don't think his popularity wavers all that much. I mean, obviously, he was more popular with golden era comic books and stuff like that, and there is a lot of criticism because he's like, you know, people that don't read Superman stories say, well, he's indestructible and nothing can stop him. That's just silly.
He's died, I think, more times than Batman.
Yeah, I mean, he has been just destroyed by so many different characters in the DC universe.
He's first of all, not only is he weak against kryptonite, he's weak against magic, you know, a robot can take him on.
There's a lot of stories that you can tell. You can make him vulnerable.
Yeah. If you're smart enough, you can defeat Superman. You just have to have the brains to do it.
Yeah, and there's so many good stories that are out there about Superman that could be retold or touched on in a game setting that I think would work. And then in that sense, it just comes down to the gameplay. And I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, the gameplay's got to be exciting. It's got to be epic. Like you said, I totally agree with you. It's Superman is a completely different type of character than like the traditional, like a Batman. So, The gameplay and fighting and battles and stuff would just have to be
everything would just be completely different.
Complete, yeah, like destruction. Mm-hmm. I mean, lots of destruction and flying around and lots of speed. And
Arkham Asylum worked and was a surprise because they found all these creative ways to make Batman stuff work as a video game. Mm-hmm. But they were Batman things, mm-hmm. you know, things that Batman's good at, things that Batman is about and the universe is about, and so they could flesh that out and take each individual element and make a game out of it. They couldn't just translate that to Superman.
No, not at all. But what I mean when I'm comparing it to Batman is translating the archetype of just taking a superhero game and making translating it really well into a game sense. And I know it would be completely different with Superman, but it would be cool to see a good Superman game in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Be good to see. It would be cool
to see another good superhero game.
It'd be good to see a new Justice League game.
That would be cool.
You know, I've heard when you play Arkham Knight, you know, did you see the LexCorp building?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That was the first time I ever saw Lex, I think, mentioned in the Arkham games.
That's a good point.
You know, and they start using the word metahuman more often.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I noticed that immediately. When I heard the chatter about the guy saying metahuman, I was like, did he just say metahuman? And I looked down at like, because I have subtitles on, mm-hmm. and I read it, and I was like, that's a weird thing for them to say in this game. So that's a really good point. And they do tease. I mean, you know, if they had knowledge that another team was working on a Superman game, even if it is another team, they tease at some of the events and origins in this game. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for them to tease at Superman in the Arkham games, even if it's just little things like the LexCorp building and stuff. So that's a really good point. Maybe there is some meaning behind that other than just throwing in DC references.
Yeah.
You know? So, that would be cool. I would, like I said, I'd love to see, I'd just like to see more good superhero games in general. they are. I just feel like there's so much that could be done with like with translating superheroes into game forms that just like there's certain heroes and stuff that are just begging to be in a game.
Yeah.
I mean, it just like makes sense, you know, certain things. And it's just funny to me because these they're more popular than ever, and they're popular in all these different mediums. But then the game like superhero games are just. They're still like, yeah, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Other than Batman, so.
Well, I mean, the issue with the rest of them is that they're just movie license trying to rush them out.
Yeah, like that. that's true.
Like even when it wasn't like with Wolverine, the Wolverine game, like the game was all right. It was better than the movie, but like it was still, it wasn't like it redefined.
It was a really good game.
Yeah, but
I really enjoyed it.
With the story, the reason why it became was as fun as it was is because. They found out they had like several more months to do it, so they were like, "All right, so I guess we'll just you know."
Because they completely changed the story.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't like it touched on the movie stuff a little bit, but it wasn't nearly as horrible.
Yeah,
that game was fun. Yeah, there's and that's the thing is, to me, when you see when a, like an actual good developer gets a good chunk of time to develop these games. And they're not tied to a movie license or not tied to like a movie release schedule. There's a few gems hidden in there in certain times when it comes to superhero games, and that proves to me that you know that there's just so much potential there. And I would love to see. I can just think of. I mean, I could rattle off just like dozens of sweet games that I would like to see, like. A Green Arrow game.
Yeah.
I think that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. Just like little things like that. So, anyway, I just wanted to touch on that. Maybe the rumor is just BS, but if it's true, I hope for the best.
Yeah.
I think it would be cool. It would be cool to have a fun Superman game.
So I wasn't sure how well Arkham Origins was received. Out of curiosity, I looked on VG charts, and combined total, it sold 4 million exact. Whereas the average, like, Arkham Asylum sold 9 million, and Arkham City sold 10 million.
Yeah, well, Arkham Origins, yeah, I'm not surprised either. People, they didn't like the fact that, I don't know, it was a new developer. They
even
didn't like
still,
the fact
though, you don't see that much of a, you don't see a 6 million copy discrepancy between Assassin's Creed games. Like, even Unity gets shit reviews, but people go out, like, people know the property. And it was, you know, this is only the third Batman game. I'm surprised. I thought it would have at least, you know, I'm not surprised it's in the last place. But this way last place, that's a bomb. I feel kind of bad for Splash Damage. Brink was their previous game. They can't do nothing right.
Man, Brink.
Brink sucked.
Brink did suck. It could have been cool. It could have been cool. So the next thing I wanted to touch on is something pretty cool that personally I was really excited for, and that a bunch of Street Fighter news came out this week. Some of it was confirmed and talked about and or announced at Comic-Con at the Street Fighter panel, and then some. There was also some leaks rumors more like. And they were all relating around like characters being possibly announced for Street Fighter V. One of them that was confirmed and released like at by Capcom themselves at the Street Fighter panel was Ken, which is cool. I'm happy to see Ken back. And to go along with what I said before in like a previous podcast, I love that they're taking chances with the characters. They're changing, like, just little things visually. Like, they're changing the design of Ken. Not only that, but they have completely redesigned his whole moveset is different. His whole offensive style and everything.
No way.
I mean, you're talking about a character that's had pretty much the same moveset for, you know, 25 years now. 20 years. Almost 25, yeah. And for them to take a chance with him and make him completely, like, differentiate him from Ryu and give him a different fighting style and everything, I think it's really cool.
I like the stage.
Yeah, the stage is really cool.
Grand Central Station.
They also, now, here's a weird thing. So at the end of the trailer for Ken, there's, like, this other character that flashes on screen. which they've been doing with a lot of these announcements. They, you know, they announce the next character by showing you a quick glimpse at the end of the trailer. And they did that in the Ken video that they released.
Wait, who's the guy Ken's beating the shit out of in
this video? That's Birdie.
Did he have a previous trailer?
He was in the Alpha series. Yeah, he got announced the same time as Cammy.
Oh, okay, that's right.
So, at the end of this trailer, they show this character, and I've seen, like, freeze frames and stuff that people have taken, because it happens really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like either a brand new character, because he has, like, face paint. And, it's either a brand new character or a pretty hefty redesign of someone. One guess that I've heard that seems pretty credible to me is it might be like Blanka in human form.
Oh, nice.
Which I think would be cool. Like right here is when it comes up.
I saw right now.
So at first it looked kind of like Akuma, but it's not. You can tell if you pause it that it's not him. And he appears to have like kind of like dreadlocks or something.
Yeah.
So what also lends credibility to the fact that it might be Blanka. Yeah. So one of the developers, like the main guy, I forget his name now, but the main developer for Street Fighter, it's been around forever, he was teasing at the next character release, and he did the video, and then he like cut to he was showing a Brazilian stage, and then it cut back to him, and he was wearing a Blanca costume.
Oh, nice.
And then, like a couple days later, they announce Ken and show this character at the end, so... It could be like a human version of Blanka, which would be sweet. It could be a brand new character, which would also be cool. But it would be neat to see like a, you know, complete, like to go along with Ken and the other characters, a different take on Blanka.
I can't believe that of all the Street, because I'm not very familiar with who came out when, and of all the Street Fighter characters to come out in 4, it was fucking Rufus.
What about Rufus?
I didn't know that Rufus was new to 4. Oh, like, they had 3 new characters, and he was one of them.
Yeah, Rufus.
I bet you saw, like, the new character reveal before the game came out. You're like, yeah! You seem like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I can't say I was super excited to see the new characters. There was more than 3. There was Crimson Viper, Abel, Rufus, Yuri, there was Gouken, and what's his name? Oni. So there was a few new characters in 5, but I wasn't a huge fan. Gouken was cool. It was cool to have him in the game. But the other ones, like the original characters, Gouken was already like established. He just had never been in a game. So I hope the new characters are a little better in this one, and I hope to see more. Now to go along with this statement, I hope to see more characters from Street Fighter 3. And
underrated game.
Yeah. So one of the characters, the character from Street Fighter 3 that is like unanimously wanted the most is Alex. He was like the flagship character in Street Fighter 3. He was in like all the marketing stuff for 3, and he was like, you know, he was going to be like the new main character in the Street Fighter. That was kind of the way it was posed, and he was really cool. He had like grappling moves and different stuff like that, and he had a cool design. And so,
New Yorker accent. He was a New Yorker.
Everybody wanted him to be in 4, and now 5 is coming around, and there's a rumor that came out from some website I'd never heard of that he, him and, what was the other character? It was Alex and another character are going to be in announced for Street Fighter 5 soon. And that would be really cool. I would love that. Alex was a sweet character, and I would... Oh, Alex and, what was his name? Urien, I think, from Street Fighter 3. He was, like, the guy that had, like, the underwear wraps, and he had, like, Illuminati's thing on his head, which is what Charlie has. So that's why people are thinking he's going to be in the game, which makes sense.
Cool.
That's kind of bridging the gap story-wise between 4 and 3.
And I understand 4 is supposed to take place before 3.
4 does. 4 takes place before 3. Nobody knows yet where 5 takes place in the canon.
Okay.
I hope it's after 3.
Yeah, me too.
Just to like have a new evolution on the series, but we'll see. Another game, Phil, that you were a little angry about this when I told you about it, Hitman. Mm-hmm. The new Hitman is coming out in December, early December. And IO Interactive came out with a sort of like a statement kind of interview that they were explaining more their process for it, like how it's going to look. Because a lot of people were kind of curious about this. What kind of game is it going to be? Mm-hmm. It's going to be like a normal Hitman with story and stuff, because they're talking about, you know, like these sort of online experiences and things like that. So they kind of cleared that up a bit, and they said that the story part of it is going to be sort of released episodically. They stayed away from using that terminology, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're going to be releasing the story in segments.
Well, is this story? Do we have to purchase? Is this a purchase?
No, they did say that.
That's a little bit better, but I don't know.
There are no microtransactions. Everything.
Okay.
Basically, they want to release a $60 game with before Christmas time during the holiday season without having to actually finish it.
Well, you know, when you think about it, they're handling it better than the guys behind Unity, right?
Well, we don't know how they're handling it, because we don't know how it's going to look. But they did say that there's also going to be other elements to the game, like live content. They're going to be changing things as you play them. And I don't know how it's going to look, but I'm very curious to see that. It's kind of, you know, it is a little...
It's a change that I'm not welcoming too much, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know how it's going to look to have a story released over the course of a period of time. I mean, to me, like, Hitman games are always story driven, so
yeah. I don't know. It's not a series that I really need to see go in some crazy different directions. Like, it can still be a linear regular game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the way I kind of think of it, maybe what they're going for is Hitman games are always like, the missions themselves are always like very kind of standalone. I mean, they have stories to bridge the gap from mission to mission, but they're all these like completely different experiences and segments. These missions, like, you have this mission over here and you're in this one big area, and then this mission's like in a mansion, and maybe they're just playing on that and planning on having a bunch of different like user generated missions and stuff. And they kind of had a little bit of that in Absolution, mm-hmm. the online content, and that you could do different things, like with enemy paths, and if I remember correctly, and so maybe they're just going with that route and hoping that that's what the community wants. And I don't know, we'll see yeah. how it works out.
Yeah, not one of the craziest things I've ever heard.
Yeah,
I still can I can see the game working out pretty well regardless, but I hope that it's not too many pieces, if it is in pieces, and the original chunk of the game that's released on day one is substantial.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. If I'm getting the game day one, I want it to have $60 worth of content that day. I don't have to wait for $60 of content.
Exactly.
So that, I agree 100%. And that's really what's most important, is it going to have value on immediately and then just added to it later on, or are you going to have to wait to until you get the value that you paid for? Because nobody wants that.
No.
Going to some better news as far as releases of expansions and things like that. Witcher 3, which we're all, you know, somewhat fans of.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
we kind of liked it.
Kind of is all right.
It sucked.
Johnny thinks it sucked. So The Witcher 3... So for one, there's a patch being released for the game that's very substantial. Changing quite a bit of things for the better. Fixing a lot of like glitches and stuff. But then they're also adding like storage, finally.
Good.
Like in Witcher 2, you had your storage chest so you could keep things in.
That's cool. That's awesome.
And then a few other changes they're having, like there's like a new movement system for Geralt that you can toggle on and off. I don't know how that's going
to
look.
So there were a few complaints. Basically, I'm trying to try to find the big... Oh, fuck. I was hoping that I'd have... so it has a new movement style for Geralt to enable in the gameplay movement response submenu that they're adding. So I don't know what that means. I know there were some complaints that you move too stiff. Maybe so that you can move easier in closer range areas or closer quarters. Damn it. I was hoping the official site would list all the key things instead of just a huge dump of technical jargon. But the highlights are basically that they're adding an entire area of your inventory for books and notes, which if you played the game, you know that that was a huge problem because all of the potions that you use and food items are under every note you collect in the game.
Yeah.
Who thought of that? There's nothing that marks what's you know, what you haven't read yet and stuff like that. So they're really revamping the inventory system and addressing a lot of complaints. A lot. There's like 5 major complaints that they're totally going with community ideas that were actually good community ideas for once. So, it was really impressive that they, 7 patches! Holy shit! The game hasn't been out. When did it come out?
June, right?
No, May.
May, yeah, right.
May 19th. So, it's been almost 2 months now. And in 9 days, it'll have been 2 months or so.
Excuse me.
That sneeze sounded like a party popper. That just threw me off.
How many patches they've released in the...
Oh, yeah. So 7 patches in less than 2 months. That's crazy.
It's huge.
That's huge. And then not only that, you know, there's like, there have been... I haven't followed how many free DLCs there have been because I haven't been interested in them. I never could get them to work. I don't know why. Maybe some whores taking them on my GOG account. But, because that was open for people to use. But, yeah, I don't know.
I'm also reading that the expansions will be the size of Witcher 2.
That was the next part, yeah.
Spoilers.
They said that the Witcher 3 expansions, won't be nearly the size, if not a bit bigger than Witcher 2, which is pretty awesome. Fucking awesome.
Yeah. I beat Witcher 2
makes me smile.
In 17 hours. Yeah. Gives Phil the smiles. I beat Witcher 2 in 17 hours, but I was on easy mode, and while I did do pretty much every side quest in the game, I felt like I did sort of rush through it, so I can understand
people taking... quite a bit longer than that.
Yeah, I can see people taking 30 hours, and myself...
I was right around there.
But, like, it doesn't matter how long these expansions take, so long as they are side quests that are longer than the normally really long side quests. I mean, just think about that. They're so good at implementing side stories in this game. Like, what? All I need is for... If each of these expansions... They didn't even need to introduce anything new. If they were just 2 quests that were, like, the quality of the Bloody Baron story, but, like, 2 times longer each... Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I'd be like, holy shit, that would be like some of the best DLC of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would add so much to the game. And like, a part of me is still, after beating this story, a part of me is still hungry for like a Witcher 4, but I know that we won't get it because it's supposed to resolve Geralt's story. So, the fact that this has us continuing Geralt's side stories in these DLCs, you know, in other lands and stuff, and having this much content... it satisfies the need for a Witcher 4 and makes a game just as long as the last one.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Less than a year after the Witcher 3 came out.
Yeah, I'm definitely stoked to see. I mean, it's such a great game that having more of it, just like you said, they don't even have to necessarily change anything, just having more of Witcher 3 stuff is fine with me. The game was... Yeah, the game is quality enough that
I feel like they're spoiling us.
Yeah, I know.
CD Projekt.
It's so crazy to have like this much, care and attention in this day and age.
It's just too good to be true.
Yeah, it is. Which is a shame that that's the way we feel about the gaming industry. That anyway, Johnny, you wanted to talk about a little bit about Red Ash, which I don't know a ton about this, so you'll have to explain.
Did you mean Red Ass?
No, I don't. Is that what it's called?
That was, No, actually, it's Keiji Inafune is back for the 15th fucking time this week. He is back to do yet another fucking thing that he always wanted to fucking make, but couldn't because the man stuck it to him. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little jaded about him right now. Basically, he's coming back. Is this
Complaint Cast Part 2?
No.
Okay.
Hey, there haven't been any complaints enough. Comcept is the company that KG owns, and it started with Mighty No. 9. It's also what they're using to make the Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, which, you know, it has a different dev team on it. But the anyways, so yeah, Red Ash is a new IP that Keiji Inafune has always wanted to do with the subtitle of The Indelible Legend. Whatever, I read it as Inedible Legend, but whatever.
It's also true, technically.
Yeah, he could be edible. You don't know. But it's supposed to be the spiritual successor to Mega Man Legends. So they made two Mega Man Legends games. They were like Dreamcast games or PS1.
No, they were 64 and PS1.
Yep. Did you guys play them?
I played the first one, I remember loving it.
I played the first one a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really my thing, though.
Like, I was looking back at it, and I can get those games kicking ass at the time. But they're really old.
Yeah.
And they kind of sparked, you know, some good ideas. I mean, it's like Shenmue. You're looking at Shenmue, where it's like, wow, this is really unique, and it sparked some good ideas. But, like, it's Mega Man. It's Mega Man's story, and it's really old, dated gameplay. Like, Shenmue's dated gameplay still kind of, like, you know, works in its charm, but people want Shenmue 3 to see the story continue. Mega Man Legends 3, maybe, if they wanted to see the story continue. I don't know if Mega Man Legends 2 ended off in some cliffhanger. But he always wanted to make Mega Man Legends 3. Capcom said no, and people have been clamoring for it forever. And so finally he's like, okay, well, I'll make a game like that called Red Ash, similar to Mighty No. 9. It's a new IP yet again. I'm honestly surprised he didn't just take the Mighty No. 9 IP and make a Legends-type thing out of that, mm-hmm. and just make that the new Mega Man-type deal. Because people are already, you know, they're already fans of it. They've funded a anime for it. There's a live-action Mighty No. 9 movie coming out. But no, while this is still in production, Tom Hardy as
just kidding,
as Call
Number. Oh,
they're just the manly buddy cop, like yeah. So,
have you seen him in Peaky Blinders? In the second season of Peaky Blinders, Tom Hardy, he's like, he has this really thick accent. And he implies that he got a lawyer. But this is how he says it. A gala. The second season of Peaky Blinders. But anyway, Red Ash.
I don't think there's ever been a thing where Tom Hardy hasn't had an incredibly inaudibly thick accent that no one can pinpoint. Isn't he like something totally unlike what he sounds in his movie too? Like he's fucking like Welsh or something. So yeah, this Red Ash game has like no footage. It's got nothing. It's just got concept art. It's a new IP. It was released at the same time, like, you know, Mighty No. 9 is not even out yet, and it's disappointing. Like, they want to have the same company be funded for yet another project doing, I mean, this is the same team. And they also brought in Studio 4C, which is an anime studio, to do a separate Kickstarter. A second Kickstarter release at the same time for an anime for this thing that no one knows anything about. Who the fuck is going to fund an anime that doesn't even have anything? It's just got concept art. They designed the characters. That's literally it. That's it. And you know the gameplay is going to be like Mega Man Legends, a fucking Nintendo 64 game, which tons of games have since like superseded. Like it's an adventure game. Awesome. But like adventure games have evolved a lot. You know, Mega Man Legends type games, thanks to Mega Man Legends and other games like it, have gone somewhere. Like, we don't really need a successor if it's not going to continue what already exists. So this opinion goes through the Kickstarter. 4,400 backers, which isn't hardly anything. It's $354,000. They won $800,000, and it's been over a week. like, I think it's going to make it maybe, but it's barely. Like, it got a bunch at first, like 200,000, and it's just, it's gotten dollars a day. It's...
He needs to just lay off Kickstarter for a while until he sees a project through to the end.
He's making a Microsoft AAA project that we also know nothing about. He probably wants a Kickstarter to fund the TV series for it. Like, I mean, why would... And the anime is also not even close to being funded, and they only want 80 grand for it. But, like, why fund an anime? Like, they just make... Do you know how much anime comes out every season in Japan for new... IPs, like, every single season there's, like, 15 plus different anime. Why would we want to throw money at one more when we know equally as little about it? Like, there's nothing. It's just Keiji Inafune thought...
I don't know why you'd release the anime Kickstarter at the same time. Wait till the game... Till you've released, like, videos and story details and things like that.
They're literally doing Mighty No. 9 all over again, but with an even more dated gameplay concept. It's like, I have respect for Legends after looking at gameplay. I was like, this is cool, but, like, it's old, you know? It's actually dated now. I don't see people going back and beating the first two Legends games to play Red Ash. And so it's like, I could see if they were to, like, if Capcom were to fund Legends 3, and it's an actual Mega Man game, and they rethink a bunch, they add a bunch of new ideas to the table of a Mega Man adventure game, that would be understandable. That's what the fans really probably want, but this game's not getting any money, so yet another thing that Keiji Inafune, the guy who criticizes the Japanese game industry on a regular basis, seems to screw up on.
So, another game that's kind of... This is just kind of a small piece of news. In fact, it was discredited by... what's his name? Itagagi. But Devil's Third, which... I feel like we're the only three people that know that game. I remember when it showed off at E3, it was like this tiny little room. There was like four people watching. And
you're like, "Wah."
Yeah, and it was just like... After like a during a conference or something, so it was like, I don't know. I just feel like it's the kind of game that just got lost in the shuffle. But
it was like a trailer that they showed before the Nintendo press conference started, like it, while you wait.
Yeah, and it looked just ridiculous.
I'd actually known about the game for a while, but that was the first time they showed like concrete gameplay. It's been in the works for like 3 years.
Yeah. And, you know, it looks fun. It looks kind of shitty, too. And
it's like over-the-top shitty kind of fun.
Yeah. And anyway, there's a rumor that it wasn't going to get brought to North America. And he came out and said that that's just rumors and lies. So hopefully that's not true. I don't know why the Nintendo's got this thing where they're just, like, not wanting to bring import games to North America.
We don't want to bring our games to your country. Because
you were just talking about that.
Fire Emblem.
How dare you?
Like, why is this... Are they just have this sudden...
I mean, it's weird because it's like they've planned all along. Awakening did incredibly well in the U.S. And the new one, like, obviously you'd want to get it out to the U.S. as quickly as possible because we bought it. We fucking bought tons of copies, like a couple million. Like, that's a success for a handheld game. But, Nintendo's slow. I don't know. It's like Nintendo's just slow at localizing now, whereas, if they're not that interested in a very Japanese project. They bring it out way later.
And this isn't even... This is, like, the most Western thing I've ever seen. It's, like... I mean, other than it has, like, samurai guy or, like, Yakuza guys with swords, it's, like...
They don't like that it's M-rated. I don't know.
I don't know either. It's weird.
But yeah, it's, like... And, you know, Fatal Frame, they gave it, like, zero attention. Fucking took us, like, years to get that Yokai Watch. I mean, it's been out for literally 2.5 years in Japan. We're getting it this December. Like, when they announce it, it's still, like, half a year out. Like, what we've been waiting for years. Yeah. I forgot. Yakuza 5 comes out this fall. It's another game on the pile.
Shit.
Fucking games to play.
So many games.
It's insane.
And I've been meaning to beat Yakuza 3 insane. And 4. I've been meaning to beat Yakuza 3 and 4 so I could play 5 when it came out.
Good luck.
It's never going to happen. I've been meaning to do that since 2008 or something.
So have I. Oh my goodness. So next, so Ubisoft came out with a kind of this is like a two-parter. So they came out with their sales figures over the last year, which showed that the PS4 accounts for 27% of their revenue. PS4. Hmm. PC accounts for 23% of their revenue.
Wait, who's?
Ubisoft.
Oh.
So 27% PS4, 23% PC.
That's...
What? So, yeah, it is interesting. And then...
The numbers don't really back that up, but that's...
And then 14%... the PS3, Xbox 360, and Xbox One are responsible for around 11% of the revenue, which is somewhat surprising, blah, blah, blah. Wii U makes up 3%. So this doesn't add up to 100%, but that's okay. Yeah, anyway.
The rest of it is CEO.
Pocketing. But the point is, I wanted to point out with this is that Ubisoft is kind of notorious for having pretty shitty PC ports, other than like the Far Cry games. And my hope in seeing these sales figures, which are up from the previous year by quite a bit on PC, my hope is that when they see these figures that they will take more time and effort into PC ports of games and not release these piles of crap. And just games in general that are not... that are in working condition. Which goes to the next point. A lot of games that Ubisoft has announced and shown off have been the victim of the downgrade bug. You know, a lot of people complaining about... It started with Watch Dogs, Unity to a certain extent, The Division. I mean, a lot of games that Ubisoft has shown off that people have complained have been downgraded. So
some are more true than others.
Yes, very much so. So the one of the Ubisoft, the I don't know who it was, one of the main guys at Ubisoft said that they're actually they've changed their policy to if the game is shown off like live gameplay, it has to be playable on the platform that it's designed for. So no more showing off a gameplay for my game that's running on a high-end PC and saying this game's coming to PS4 and Xbox One this fall. They're going to show off these games running on PS4 hardware, running on Xbox One hardware from now on.
Okay.
So that they don't have to go through this, potentially they don't have to go through this, you know, downgrade fiascos every time they show off a game and it's running on a PC with two Titans and, you know, so on and so forth. So
or just a pre-rendered, you know.
Yeah, just a CG cutscene. So I think that's good. It's good to know that they're actually, you know, working on changing the perception that their company has. I hope that that goes deeper, that they, you know, work a little harder on releasing games in better form, quality assurance-wise. And again, like I said, PC ports need to be a higher priority, especially if they're accounting for 22% or 23% of their sales. I think it just makes sense, you know. So let's hope for the best this fall with Ubisoft, some of their games coming out, and 2016.
The biggest news, though, of the day, just announced, Black Ops 3's Special Edition comes with a working mini fridge.
Woohoo.
Know your audience.
You know, I kind of want that.
Yeah, it's cool.
Oh. Wait, so like this place works with... Check it out. It's Call of Duty Gamers.
It's the Juggernog working mini fridge.
So it's just a mini fridge.
Okay, but why would Call of Duty fans want a mini fridge?
Well, let me tell you why. The Mountain Dew.
Yeah. You go get Call of Duty. You're going to, you know, binge play it with a bunch of your friends and get online and play for... You're going to marathon it for quite a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to, you know, your store. You get your midnight release, your Black Ops 3. Then you go pick up a bunch of cold drinks and maybe some refrigerated snacks. You throw them in your mini fridge and you marathon your game.
Yeah.
You don't even have to get up.
You open the Juggernog in the game to get your gun. You open the Juggernog in real life.
Let me tell you something.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
There's certain games where I would love if they came with a mini fridge because I'm going to marathon through them and I would like cold drinks at the ready when I play them.
And Black Ops 3
may not be that game for me, but if Metal Gear Solid came with a mini fridge, I'd be cool with that.
Cool.
came awesome. With a robotic mini fridge with the with a nuke attached to it.
Yeah.
So.
And stealth camo. And don't forget an infinite ammo bandana.
Yes. The bandana is back. Johnny, if you this piece of news I wanted you to touch on, because I thought it was pretty cool. We all thought it was pretty cool. But Sega came out with a statement, I guess, and talking about their public perception and hopefully changing that. Mm-hmm. And they compared what they want to do with Atlus.
Atlus. Fatlus. So basically, Sega bought Atlus to some great concern and mixed responses last year? It happened sometime.
Yeah. Probably longer ago than we think.
Their company Index Holdings went under because... And Index Holdings was sketchy. A super sketchy business. Like, Atlus was their only game company. They just did weird random shit. Like, they sold Kleenex. I don't freaking know. But, they went under due to... they had some sketchy business practices. They lost hundreds of millions of dollars to be
sued.
We
make games and have waffle houses all over the southern United States.
It's that kind of thing. They're just a conglomerate that just owns shit. Like, they just own so much. They're like, what? None of these have anything to do with each other.
Yeah, that's funny.
And it's just all Japanese stuff. But so Atlus USA is notorious for being open to localizing literally anything they can. And they know that they have a niche fan base and a following for what they select or what they make. Their development team is very selective. And so it's like they don't really put much money into putting out these games, but they put a lot of heart into it. And they don't make much money, but they profit enough to keep doing it. So they're small. You know, they're like 20 people. And Sega brought them in, and Atlus are very well known. I mean, in Japan, they're a lot bigger. Obviously, they make Persona, but Sega brought them in, and Sega of America learned from Sega or from Atlus and their business practices. And Sega has been shitty lately, and they weren't bringing out games that Westerners wanted because they actually, had quotes where it's like, well, it won't sell 2 million copies, so it'll be a failure. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. But, Sega only cared about the millions, and since then they've brought over Project D.Va games, they've brought over the fifth Yakuza game when they previously had, like, zero plans of touching it. So, yeah, Sega's gotten better, but they still have some serious quality assurance issues. So, two things happened with Sega recently. One, they apologized for their lack of quality control and their lack of localization. They said they learned a lot from Atlus and that they have a big quality title on the way at TGS coming up, which Tokyo Game Show this year, it's usually very underwhelming. And once again, I have very high hopes for this year. Because something's got to fucking happen one of these days.
What do you think it might be?
Well, Persona 5 has to have a release date. And if they don't have one by then, it's not coming out this year. So,
Is it already announced that... Well, never mind. So do you think it's going to be a simultaneous release, right? I mean, it has to be at this point.
Persona?
Yeah.
They've never done that before, and that'd be really weird.
Be so, cool though. I mean, it'd be crazy. If that's like their new focus,
they've done that twice. I've seen Japanese devs do this twice, once with Metal Gear, but that's because it sells like 8 times more in the U.S.
Right,
and once with Pokemon, the most recent one. They both had Well, actually, we get it before Japan. No, I'm wrong. We get it the same day of Japan. I didn't think about that. They get it a day later, right?
Who?
Japan, for Metal Gear. Don't they get it, like, on the 2nd and we get it on the 1st?
Because
the 2nd for them is the 1st for us.
Right.
So, we get it literally same day. So I highly doubt that a fully translated and dubbed JRPG is going to make it day one, because Atlus USA is a small company, and they typically take 3 months for every major release Atlus puts out. Catherine, Demon Souls. There's months of distance. And so I could see them putting out in like 2 months, but they'd have to basically say in Japan, like, oh, this comes out next month. Holy shit. When it was like, oh, yay. But Atlas USA keeps saying on Facebook, 2015, 2015. Somebody comments this, but what's the real date? And they respond to that saying, 2015.
Really?
Yeah. That's so funny. They actually, the Atlas Facebook page, actually, whoever runs it has a real sense of humor. It's,
huh, that's cool.
They'll address trolls with wit. And, cool. Yeah, it's interesting. But, yeah, so the fact that Sega's taking after Atlas makes me have hopes for Sega. You know, Sega's fucked Sonic, amongst other things, in recent years. And I know a lot of people that want to see a lot from Sega. And they have, you know, they hold a lot of IPs that they could do something with.
If Sonic was a living creature, he'd be pumping gas right now.
Yeah.
He'd be, like, downtown. You'd see him, like, on the side of the corner, and you'd be like, is that Sonic there? What's he doing? He looks bad.
He's got a beard.
Looks all disheveled. Yeah, he's walking, stumbling around downtown Eugene.
With fucking tequila. Yeah, so
it's kind of tweaking a little. Don't forget that.
If you think about it, Sega is kind of in the same position as Square Enix. I mean, maybe Square Enix.
I think that they're a little bit better than Sega, right?
Right now they're way better than Sega. Yeah. But Square Enix was in a bad spot. They put in a lot of money and they weren't getting the right results, and it kept going downhill and downhill. And then all of a sudden, Square Enix smartened up and said, we're going to start putting out a shit ton of quality games. We're going to just do a total overhaul, and we're going to start doing lots of third-party localizations. We're going to start doing stuff with our IPs.
What they're asking for.
Yeah. Square Enix is still not very, you know, they're not perfect. They still got stuff, like, people would buy Chrono Trigger in an instant, but they still...
But they've made huge strides.
Especially recent year. Last 3 years, they've made monstrous leaps. In fact, the last 3 years were the defining years.
Yeah.
As soon as Final Fantasy XIV came out, like, everything just turned around.
It would be really cool to see Sega have a similar, you know, resurgence as far as their public perception and just their quality.
They sit on enough IPs and have enough of company size, mm-hmm, that they could buy enough, produce enough, develop enough, that if they actually put some time in games that sell and quality, they could take off. They're in the position to take off again, but they're slowly killing themselves for no good reason. Konami and Capcom, I feel like, have dug themselves a hole. They're sitting on a bunch of IPs, but they don't have money anymore. Mm-hmm. Sega does. That's the difference. So it's like, goddamn.
Well, so, go to Sega. We have high hopes for
Sega. Yeah. Buy Capcom and Konami and become the make a new console.
Yeah, that'd be so awesome.
That'd be the shit. And buy SNK while you're at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Please,
just Atlas, and, SNK, Capcom, oh Konami, Sega.
The 3DO2 and the launch title is a new King of Fighters.
The 3DO
and Street a new Capcom versus SNK 3. That would be the launch title. Oh, God. I just got excited. All right. Before I get crazy...
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It's happening. You heard it here first. So, another blast from the past, speaking of Sega and being good. The Nintendo PlayStation. We've all heard the story, mm-hmm, that the Super Nintendo was originally going to have a peripheral called the PlayStation. It was going to be a disc-based console that was going to attach to the Super Nintendo. Nintendo and Sony were in talks of doing it and had developed it. But then Nintendo went behind Sony's back and started partnering with Philips and to make a disc-based system, which never came to fruition. And Sony said, okay, well, fuck you. We're going to make our own console since we already have the technology. And they did. And, you know, lo and behold, PS4 is great. Mm-hmm. Nintendo's not doing so great. But anyway, the rest is history, as they say. So we've all heard that story. And now somebody came out, I don't know who it was, some guy, mm-hmm, had in his possession a Nintendo PlayStation console of some sort,
so
like a prototype.
His dad worked at Sony.
Okay.
And he worked on the prototype. And he kind of kept it a secret, and he held on to one of the few prototypes if not the only one. When the project was canned, they just kind of let him take it home. And it was like a secret. And he stashed it in a basement, and his son found it. I think this guy has passed away.
Gotcha. I got to be honest. I think stuff like this is just so cool to me. Like, to see something we've heard about for years and years, and, like, you know, it's like, here it is.
It's just like
it's a piece of gaming history.
What just pisses like the ET cartridge though, thing, that turned out to be true, too.
Did you watch the fucking video, though?
What video?
The video of the guy. Because he took a video to prove it so that it wasn't a Photoshop. And he's just like in his kitchen. And he's like, hey guys, this is Bumblefuck 23. I got my... And he just like picks it up with his bare hands. He's like, yep, here we go. I'm not going to plug it in. I'm going to fuck it up, you know. And he's just like... He's like, he, you know, flipping it around. And I'm just like, bare hands! I mean, it's like, there's only one of those in existence. That is priceless. That is like a museum piece.
It should be in a museum.
That should be in a museum!
Sorry. Someone call Lupin. get that.
Get Lupin, Harrison Ford. Part-time.
So yeah, I thought that was cool. I like that. I wanted to talk a little bit about... Phil, let's just get right into it. Actually, sorry, one more piece of news, and then we'll talk about... You want to talk about Terminator Genesis and a little more about Arkham Knight. The last piece of news, I wrote this down while we were speaking, but WWE 2K16, they announced the cover star is going to be Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Sweet.
And there's going to be a Stone Cold Steve Austin showcase, which is this game's like story mode type thing. It's just a retelling of old matches.
I see Brock Lesnar, dude.
Yeah, we're... Phil, you just believe anything you see. Anyway, the showcase mode is what their story type thing is. You relive the matches as they happen. In each match, you have different objectives, and it plays like short cutscenes like they happened in real life. And so it's going to have Stone Cold. I mentioned last week how the roster is going to be just enormous. So obviously, some of those characters are going to come from this showcase. So I'm excited to see who is going to be in it. There are certain people that could potentially be in it that are a bit controversial, such as Owen Hart.
Okay.
So Owen Hart had a big part in Stone Cold Steve Austin's early career in wrestling.
I remember that. I saw that match on the DVD.
So some people speculate that now WWE supposedly is working on an Owen Hart DVD set that looks like his matches and a documentary and stuff.
Cool.
And Owen Hart's widow has been very adamant that she wants nothing to do with his wrestling. That she doesn't want to okay anything with wrestling. She wants to just pretend like it never happened. And that's how she deals with the grief, I guess. But you have, you know, so many people that were fans of him growing up and that would love to relive his matches and learn from other people that knew him, what he, you know, things that he liked. And there's so many cool stories you hear about from like other interviews with wrestlers. Like, he was a really funny guy and pranked everybody and ribbed them. So anyway, potentially he could be in the game. It'd be really cool. People would like that.
I thought you were going to say, I thought you were going to say Chris Benoit for a second.
No, I knew you were going to go there. But no, I wasn't going to say that. He will never be in anything. Yeah. Kurt Angle's another one. He had a big part, but he's with TNA, so I doubt that will happen. But it would be cool.
Yeah.
I'd be down with that. I'd love to have him in the game. So, we'll see. I thought that was cool. So with that said, Phil, you saw Terminator Genesis, and you already spoiled it and said it sucked at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's an interesting kind of suck to me, because there's merits in it. I actually want to get the positive out of the way before I go on to the rest of the movie.
Okay.
So I want to start with saying that, you know, it has a cool opening credit segment, where it's like this montage, and it kind of transitions from, like, you know, a normal civilization to the bombs being launched, and then to, you know, John Connor fighting the machines. And it would actually been awesome if it hadn't been ruined by the narration going along with it, where it was just throwing it all in your lap, just shoving it down your throat. That was a pretty cool opening segment section. Plus, you know, the robot fights are still pretty awesome. You know, there's one segment where you have Arnold Schwarzenegger holding a T-2000 under a shower of acid, and the acid just destroys the fucking thing. I thought that was pretty sweet. You know,
are the special effects good?
The special effects are fine. Yeah, the special effects are totally fine. And, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's still cool. All you have to do is, you know, crop his fat ass and he's good to go. But, you know, and I'm... And another thing is, I was skeptical about... Here's one of the best things about this movie. And I know that's not saying much, but here's one of the best things about it. Jason Clarke is... He plays John Connor. He's an awesome bad guy in this movie. Like, he's... I thought that he was actually one of the... best parts about the movie. Even if he wasn't John Connor, he would still be an awesome villain. I think he's actually the most interesting villain in the Terminator franchise because he's not a straight up machine. He's part human and part machine, and what makes him so cool is that he knows he's a machine and he likes it. And I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah, Jason Clarke puts a lot of work into his character, and it shows. And it's just kind of a sad. That just makes it even more sad because you know, there's some good stuff in this movie that just goes to waste. Emilia Clarke, she's pretty. From one angle, she's cute. Another angle, she's beautiful. And then from another angle, she's hot. She's all of it. And I'm just a sucker for I'm a sucker for cute girls that shoot shit. And she's shooting a bunch of shit in this movie, and it's cool.
Is that what they did back then?
Yeah. You say that's old school. Like,
well, it's like the 60s. It's like, well, no, like mid-90s.
I want a woman that can,
you know,
shoot some
Lara Croft.
Okay.
You know, if you really want me to be critical, really honest about it, that's kind of just it. Like, Emilia Clarke is... She's pretty, and I have a guilty pleasure for her in this movie for a woman who just really doesn't fill the shoes of Sarah Connor. Like, with the three actresses who've played Sarah Connor, she's, like, on the bottom of the Sarah Connor meter. She's got this cute punk rock Ramones fan thing going on, and I just don't, like, I just don't imagine her... I just can't really imagine her as Sarah Connor. She's too cute.
They're casting.
She's talented, but
yeah, that was the thing about what's her name?
Lena Headey?
No, the first Sarah Connor.
Linda Hamilton. Yeah,
Linda Hamilton.
Yeah, but
Linda Hamilton was she wasn't all that like attractive. She was more of like she was just a badass.
I want to talk about Linda Hamilton. You see, Lena Headey from the Sarah Connor Chronicles. She's also in Game of Thrones. She played Sarah Connor. She brought her own things to the table. She had a sort of a stoicism to her. And when it comes to Emilia Clarke, I don't think they tried to capture what Linda Hamilton could.
She's such a good actress, Linda Hamilton.
Yeah, she made such a huge transformation from the character she played in the first movie.
Oh yeah.
But here's the thing: is like I remember Linda Hamilton as a kid watching Terminator 2 on T2. Okay, when I watch Emilia Clarke, I don't think, oh, she's so cute.
People back then were thinking I guarantee it.
No, Linda Hamilton was scary as shit. As she scared the hell out of me as a kid.
She was buff.
She was the mother from hell.
In Terminator 2 or 1?
2.
2. She would yell at you, then ignore you, and then abandon you to go murder someone. She was terrifying to me. And, you know, when she turns around and says, "How's the knee?" you want to run the other direction. That's Sarah Connor. You know, and Emilia Clarke is kind of... she's just kind of miscast.
My favorite Sarah Connor is Terminator 1. I'm like in the minority that likes Terminator 1. I love Terminator 2.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Terminator 1
is one of my favorite like ways you could ever do a B-movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect, in my opinion. I've probably watched it three times as many times as I've seen the second one.
Mm-hmm.
That says something. I grew up with the first movie. But I was watching some scenes with Linda Hamilton in the first movie again, and just how she like looks scared, mm-hmm. or angry. Like, it's just so... I don't know if it's a nostalgia thing.
She's one of those talented people that just... She did, Dante's Peak, And that was it. After
she did, she was one of those people that exhibited a lot through her facial expressions, body language, and every, and her acting, like just vocally and stuff too. She had the whole package, like in Terminator 2 and stuff. Vocally, she was
not the hair though, not the hair department,
not the hair department. But in Terminator 2, she just like she exuded this like badassness, this this toughness about her. That you could just feel. It was, like, tangible, you know?
And then in Dante's Peak, I'm not saying Dante's Peak was a good movie, but then she goes and she plays kind of, like, this awkward mare, and she's really good as that, too. You know, she's just one of those talented people that kind of disappears.
She was in the TV series for Defiance, the video game. Mm.
She was in that?
Yeah, apparently she was somebody named Pillar.
I hear that Defiance was a pretty good show.
I heard it was pretty bad show. But.
So to get into the shitty stuff.
So anyway, yeah. So clearly,
that's what I want to hear about.
One of the things that made the movie so bad was its plot. And that's the thing is just that what's so tragic about it is that there's a lot of cool concepts that go to waste. Furthermore, Genesis is basically an app, and it's actually Skynet, but disguised as this thing called Genesis. Jai Courtney plays Kyle Reese, and Jai Courtney sucks. This guy, he just sucks. I don't know. It's just a suck factor. It's like the last guy who played Kyle Reese in Terminator Salvation was he was cool, but and he's a good actor in his own right. But they just threw this buff guy in there, and
was he in the trailer, Kyle Reese?
Yeah, Kyle Reese is. He's actually kind of the protagonist of the movie. He's the narrator of the movie.
Oh, who's?
I just want him to shut up every time he talks. Just some,
Jai.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's like there's instances in this movie where you have one actor, one character, like a Kyle Reese going like, you know, it's a robot trying to kill us. What more do you need to know? And then you have Sarah Connelly later on in the movie going, basically, you're like, oh, look, just save the world. That's all I need to tell you. And it's like the screenwriters are just talking to the audience, telling them, look, don't think very much. We know this is nothing on what T2 was. And we know it sucks. It's like they are quitting. And they just, for some reason, you get J.K. Simmons, a great actor. He's just in this movie. For no fucking reason whatsoever. Whoa. He's just there. And I don't know why. The movie would have been fine. Nothing about the movie would have been better with him in this movie. He's just in it. You know? And that just doesn't make any sense to me at all. And another thing is, John, you were saying before we recorded that, you know, you didn't think T3 was bad. But one of the things I didn't like about this movie was that it was too much like T3. It was T3 like times four.
I don't see this as anything like T3 because Terminator Genesis looks like it's trying to be like a lot of brainless blockbusters today, but like somehow more brainless. And it's just calling back to Terminator 1 and 2. It's just a shit ton of one-liners that are just copy-pastes. You know, move it, soldier! I'll be back! As he jumps off of a fucking helicopter.
For Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's done that in every movie that he's
done. Yeah, and it's so cheap. It's so fucking lame. Let me ask you this, Phil.
I'm very curious about this. Mm-hmm. Do they touch in the movie the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger is like older?
How do they justify that? Basically, he's just the flesh is designed to age.
Oh, okay.
That's just basically it. He's just designed to get older. And it was cool seeing him fight the old T-1000 from the first movie. That was pretty sweet. But I lost my train of thought. Okay, so basically, what they were trying to do is, I think that they were doing something kind of similar to what X-Men Days of Future Past was, where to reboot it without necessarily rebooting it. But here's the thing, is that you have Days of Future Past, which is this movie that's kind of crafted from the care of Bryan Singer, who really made it into a good movie. You know, it was crafted by someone that really cared. Someone looked at that and they're like, okay, let's do that with this franchise. because we know, okay, so that's going to sell for us. That's trendy. Just like how it is with reboots, you know? They don't realize that, like, okay, Batman Begins came from a producer that believed in the character so much that he wanted it to see it retold. Casino Royale was the James Bond reboot. That was done for other reasons and for legal reasons, but they didn't just reboot it for the sake of rebooting it. Then all these other people decided to just, okay, let's reboot this shit, let's reboot that shit, let's reboot these shitty horror movies that no one ever gave a damn about. Evil Dead was okay. But that being said, you know, this is just another part of that trend where, you know, they look at what someone else did. And I'm sure people have talked about this before and addressed it, but where they've looked at something that someone else did and they thought to themselves, okay, let's do that. And in Terminator Genesis case, it just doesn't deliver. It doesn't have the heart or care or focus that the first two movies had. And, you know, here's the thing about T1 is that that was focused. And that's a better movie. It's not, I don't think it's a B movie. It's an older movie, but at least it's focused.
Well, B movie is a classification. It's not a judge of quality. It's budget.
Okay, budget. I thought it was bad movie.
No, B means budget movies, or it means something, but it doesn't mean it's bad. B movies is one of my favorite genres.
Okay,
or
cool.
Like way of making, like The Thing. It's usually they're simple movies built on a small, like, oh, we had $6 million. Mm-hmm. It starts a lot of actors' careers. It, you know,
but yeah, Terminator Genesis is just an unfocused movie, and
Kurt Russell.
Yeah, it sucked. I think I said everything that I have to say about the movie. It has these merits to it, which just make it all the more sad.
So, I respect your opinion.
So I'm not
better or worse than 3 and Salvation. I'm just curious.
Oh God! I mean, I haven't seen I saw Salvation only once. And I walked out of it thinking it wasn't too bad. It was okay. Okay. It's just at least Salvation wasn't convoluted.
I thought that 3 was a mediocre movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get the unneeded hatred for 3, because 3 was like The Godfather Part 3. It wasn't very good, but it had to live up to the other two. Now, I think we've gotten so bottom of the barrel that if you were to watch 3 again, you'd realize that Salvation and Genesis are way fucking worse. But, like, 3 still kind of felt like a Terminator movie. Salvation and this don't feel like Terminator at all. It just feels like pandering reboot crap. Like, kind of, 3 was kind of like that. But, like, it still felt like it was continuing the story.
And
whereas Salvation was, like, you know, jumping way ahead.
To
and
me,
this is doing literally nothing.
And
this
one
is
last thing I do want to say is that there is kind of a cool father-daughter thing between the T-1000 and Sarah Connor, which was kind of sweet, but it doesn't save the movie at all.
It feels like this movie, just from watching the trailers, it's too dumb for a Terminator movie.
Yeah.
Like, Terminator isn't a... you watch a lot of these movies, like these reboots or, you know, a lot of these reboots are franchises that were never originally meant to be, like, these huge budget, crazy masterpieces. Like, these crazy good masterpieces. Mm-hmm. You know, and you reboot a genre like that, and people think of the old ones fondly, but maybe they weren't the greatest movie. Terminator weren't the kind of movies where you went in and, like, turn your brain off and just watched explosions, and you're like, oh, cool.
You're like, oh, this is an action movie that's also smart, and it's talking about something.
It had
something.
A lot of...
It's got heart.
Yeah, it had a lot of heart, and it had a lot of a story to tell.
It's talking about the human race.
In between the action. And it had a lot of humanity, and it was... You know, it was deeper than just a summer blockbuster with explosions and stuff.
Yeah.
So for those,
it was like Mad Max for the time it released.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would say even more. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good comparison. But so this movie comes out, and just to me, from watching the trailers and stuff, it's like you're dumbing down a franchise that was never meant to be dumbed down.
Well, get this. It ends with... It is the first Terminator movie where a T-1000 doesn't get destroyed at the end. But get this. At the end, he gets upgraded and becomes a T-2000. Like, what do you guys think about that?
I don't know.
I don't fucking care.
If anything, with the Terminator movies, from watching Terminator 1 and 2... People and me, like, I'm sure you guys are the same way. You watch those movies, you want that to be expanded on, mm-hmm. not dumbed down further. You know what I mean?
It's like, well, they definitely forgot, like, what made Terminator good, because what made Terminator work wasn't the whole, well, we got a new robot in each movie, and he's got a new gimmick. That was the cool, exciting, you know, bad guy. But that's what the 12-year-old you was thinking when you're watching was, well, the guy can turn into liquid. But, like, if you look at the movie, what makes it great is the heart. It's all about that. It's all about the core. So it's like, I had the plot of Terminator Genesis explained to me in its entirety. From beginning to end, I heard everything that happens in this movie. And it's the most convoluted. You know how time travel stories can turn into utter bullshit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Pretend you have somebody writing time travel thinking, this is interesting. I don't know how time travel works, because nobody does. But time travel only works in cinema if it's simple and it's not about the time travel. Mm-hmm. If it's just like it's just a plot device used with, to build up a bigger thing about, you know, having a heart to the rest of the story. Terminator Genesis is all convoluted plot-y bullshit. It's just like, we need to throw you here so we can have action scenes, because movie. We need to do this so we can do this, because movie. But their explanations are literal plot drops. It's just them sitting in a helicopter telling the other person, oh, but this robot's not that, but in this situation, and they, but really he was here the whole time, and is this time machine, and like they're literally telling you rather than showing you, and they make it insanely convoluted, like Arnold was there, and he was waiting, and he built a time machine, but he built like another time machine, and then like there's the new Terminator is made of fucking magnets. That's the 2.0, is he's made of magnets, which is like, okay, take him to a junkyard, get him one of those little sucker
things. Oh, well, that's one thing, is that they do, like, this giant, was it an MRI machine, where you get tested for cancer? It's mm-hmm. kind of like a magnet. He actually gets sucked to that mag. That actually does happen.
But, like, just...
It doesn't... It's like he basically beats it.
Just for the sake of nostalgia, you have Liquid Asian Cop show up. In a cop suit for no reason other than because remember Terminator 2, and they has not other similar chase scenes where he's fought chasing after him and he's got the same gimmick. Like that was cool in 1995, but like why recreate it for no reason other than we need another action scene in this movie? Get all the Terminators together. Isn't that great? Instead of being creative, let's just get a fucking blender of everything that's already happened, but make it mean nothing. All means nothing.
I liked the idea of, like, Terminator Salvation was interesting to me before I saw the movie.
Yeah,
because it was touching on something that hadn't been done in the Terminator franchise. It was going to the war mm-hmm. in the future. And I was like, that's cool. That's mm-hmm. awesome. They're expanding. They're trying something. They're taking this known universe and they're doing something completely different.
Something fresh.
But they're expanding on it. They're not touching on old stuff and... you know, telling you, hey, remember this? They're trying something else, and I thought that was a cool concept. The execution was not well,
was boring,
but it could have been awesome. Like yeah. that concept for a Terminator movie is very intriguing.
It didn't feel very Terminator-y by yeah. the time it was over. It was like, okay,
exactly. So that's yeah, I don't know.
But this is a whole other class of stupid. When I saw the first trailer for it, I was like. I heard there was a new Terminator movie, and I'm like, okay, this should be dead. They should stop. And then I saw the trailer, and then I barfed. It was terrible. I will never see this movie.
Phil, how many?
I was trying to think how of high of a score.
How many barf stars do you get?
How many barf puddles do you get?
Barf puddles? Like, as far as shit, like, okay, like...
Like a puddle of barf.
Okay, so I guess I would give it, like, probably say
8.5 puddles of barf,
because there are cool moments in this movie, just cool moments to go to waste. So
okay, 8.5 puddles of barf.
So
okay,
it sucks. Not too much. Well, no, you know what, that's I'm gonna give it at least 9.0 puddles of barf.
Okay.
That's
just now for all just, of you out there.
I was being too generous.
9 puddles of barf, it actually goes in reverse. So that means like 1 star.
Yeah. Right?
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Arkham Knight, since you and I are. Without giving away spoilers, there was a couple things I wanted to touch on. Just going off of some things that I talked about early on in my playthrough. So you and I both are through the main part of the story, done a lot of side missions and stuff, and for one, I just want to say that the quality of the game not only holds up throughout, but in my opinion, just keeps getting better and better. Like, I love the game. It was
There was so much stuff about it.
It was just brilliant.
I know the end of Arkham City is controversial. I know it's not the most popular one. It's not the most popular to use Striker.
I didn't like it.
But I think that killing off the Joker was probably the best thing that they've
done. I don't have a problem with killing off the Joker. Yeah. I didn't have a problem with that. I had a problem with the way they did it.
Okay, that's fair. But it's just, that is so great what they do with having the Joker in Batman's head and, oh, shit. I don't know. I
be very careful because you are likely to give away a spoiler.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. But I will say, I'm just going to say without giving too much away, Johnny and everyone listening, me and Stryker went through some of the one of the coolest things Batman related ever in any comic book, in any movie, in any video game. It was, it so makes up for the Hulk Joker fight at the end of Arkham Asylum by far. It's exactly what people wish they had at the end of Arkham Asylum.
You know, that's
I forgot about Hulk Joker.
That's a good point you make. I feel like they do things with the Batman character and mythos in this game that are very unique and very they take chances with the characters. And I really respect Rocksteady for that, and they pull it off in my opinion.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I haven't seen everything quite yet, but the main story portion that I have gone through, I agree 100%.
Was Court of the Owls ever a thing?
It wasn't. No, but sadly, it should be. It would have been great, but
I did want to say something else. The two things I wanted to touch on that I just thought were kind of cool little details, but one of the main things I wanted to say about the game is that the voice performances, specifically Kevin Conroy's, are great. I had mentioned early on when I was first playing the game that there was a couple like little interrogation sequences where his voice, like, they were kind of, the delivery was a little weird, but the story cutscenes and everything, there's a lot of scenes in the game that are that take some emotional depth in the voice work and everything, and his performance is just fantastic. It blows away anything he did in the animated series that I can remember anyway, quality wise, just because there's more depth to it, and the Joker performance, as always, is just fantastic.
Yeah.
The two details
on Mark Hamill.
Yeah, Mark Hamill. His performance in this too, in my opinion, better than any of thing he did in the animated series, which I hold very dearly.
I mean, at this point, these guys are veterans. They know the character. They know what to say and how to say it.
And they're just better, I think. Yeah. They're just better voice actors now. The one thing I wanted to say that I love in the game is the death sequences after you die, and different characters will speak to you. Like, as you die, they'll come up and be like, some of the things that Joker says, like antagonizing, are it's just like really fucked up.
I still have a soft spot for Barbara Gordon. It's not between the vertebrae, though.
Yeah, and little things like at the one part he like bends down, he's all, "Oh, off to see mom and pops in that big, what does he say?
Country club in
that
the sky.
That big country club in the sky," or something like that. And
wait, who's?
Joker. He says this like, you know when you die in the game? And
yeah.
Character, yeah, he says that during the...
Well, he's in the game?
Yeah.
How far in the campaign did you play it?
Yeah, are you like...
Ace Chemical. He's alive?
He's... Okay, you're getting there. He's not alive. He's in Batman's head because he's kind of... he's still infected with this Joker virus.
That's clever. I was wondering... I figured that they'd bring him back. I think I'd heard something about that. That's cool.
Yeah.
So...
I was worried that they, like, brought him back.
No.
The back of my mind. I pushed it to the back of my mind.
Very smart.
It's... Yeah, you'll like it.
And the final fight with him is very smart.
Another thing I want to say that's really cool is a lot of the... there's tons of Easter eggs in these games. They're just littered with them. But one that I thought was really cool is when you're going up to like the clock tower, you'll see there's like a poster for the Ghost in Grey. And that's specifically from an episode of Batman the Animated Series with the Grey Ghost, who was played by Adam West.
Yeah.
It was almost like a It was almost like a Birdman type of story. He was like a washed up actor who used to play the Grey Ghost, and he's like struggling and on hard times and stuff. And it's an episode of Batman the Animated Series, and they have a poster for it, which I thought was really cool. So, they also showed a trailer this week for the Batgirl DLC. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
Some of the characters have, like, their older, like, outfits, because it takes place before the Arkham Asylum game, I think. So that looks cool. Looks like a cool DLC. But anyway, Phil, what do you think?
God, I mean, you said everything that I'm thinking. I mean, like I said, it's one of the best Batman-oriented things I've ever seen ever since the end of The Dark Knight, which I am a fan of. And I am a fan of that speech that Gordon gives. God.
You're the Phil that we deserve.
I am the Phil that you deserve. This is the game that we deserve. Listen, Arkham Asylum, I think it'll always exist as kind of a special place for people. It's the first, like, oh my god, it's the first time people were like, oh my god, this is a good Batman game. And then...
Good superhero game for that matter.
And then you had Arkham City, which raised the bar, and Arkham Origins, which is more of the same. But this game... At first I was like, well, okay, what are they going to do that's different? They're adding the Batmobile, and that's cool. But, I mean, it's pretty much going to look like the same place, right? Well, no. I mean, the city looks very different because it's basically been reconstructed from the ground up.
They did a great job with Gotham.
Yeah, it's a different buildings and almost different everything. It's definitely not like it's not a run-of-the-mill Arkham game. And I'm glad that the game, the story makes sense of the term Arkham Knight. I'm happy for that. Mm-hmm. You know, you just play, I mean, if you play Arkham City, if you want to get updated on, like, what happened before. But Arkham Knight is definitive.
It's a great standalone story. I mean, you know, you'll obviously, with any game, you'll appreciate it more if you play the other ones. Yeah. But
I didn't beat Arkham City. I just got halfway through it.
But, yeah, just fantastic.
I did short come a silent though.
So, that's what I wanted to say, and that's our news.
Yeah.
That's our news segment.
Wonderful game.
Sort of news, not really, sort of last minute news, I guess I brought up. Suikoden 2 is still selling crazy well on the PSN.
That's cool.
I'm a part of the Suikoden revival movement on Facebook, which has like 30,000 likes.
You know, this is a blast from the past for me, because I remember watching my dad playing the first game on PlayStation 1.
Yeah, I mean, a PlayStation 1 game that people have always wanted to play but couldn't is like, it's just still selling. It's right now, I think, the number one selling game on the European PSN, and because I think it just came out for it.
But that's very cool.
Did somebody just drive by like a Studebaker?
Someone drives by and honks like every night almost. It's weird. Anyway.
They're looking for you, Striker.
I hope so.
I think it's cool that the revival movement is getting like actual mentions from Konami and being noticed, but for the most part, though, Konami fucking sucks. So if they were to bring it back, I don't think people would want to see how they'd handle it. The original team is too disbanded. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Suikoden. Suikoden.
Suikoden is the official pronunciation, but Suikoden just sounds better. It's Chinese. Or the game's Japanese, but it's based off of the Chinese book The Water Margin.
Oh, nice. Is that a fantasy book?
No, it's kind of like yes and no. It's like a historical fiction kind of thing. It's like Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Okay.
You can get a translation on Amazon. I was thinking about getting it. But yeah, the game follows the concept of that book, which is like, you know, in China, there was a revolution, and, like, one guy started building an army, and each of his friends were pieces of the army, and they represent stars in the sky, basically, and there's 120 stars that he ends up, like, fulfilling. So he recruits 120 men on this journey to go and take his... basically start a new kingdom and take over. And that's what each Suikoden game is about, is you just hunting for people and trying to make right the wrongs of... They're incredible. They're fucking... Splatoon is an amazing game. Oh, my God. But, yeah, unfortunately, you know, they're pretty old and dated now, so... But they're, like, simple enough and easy enough to get into that people are, and they're buying it, which is weird, because it's from 1998 or...
I can get into retro games very easily.
They seem very interesting to me.
Yeah, story-wise is what... The story of Suikoden 2 is what it's all about. Like, it is... One was a little more typical, but two took that, like, you're like, oh, I know this kind of story. And then they just threw a bunch of curveballs at you. Mm-hmm. Like, the main bad guy is just so raw evil. They do such a good job of portraying, like, the ultimate classic bad guy. Mm-hmm. He's considered to be one of the top two, right next to Final Fantasy VI's Kefka. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best villains in a JRPG. Luca Blight is his name, and like there's like these tactical battles that you do in the game, and where you have sort of like a tactic system, and it's really simple, sort of RTS-y. Mm-hmm. I mean but they're pretty neat. They're mostly just linear, though. Like, the story is supposed to play itself out for these battles. Mm-hmm. And Luca Blight basically has his army destroyed around the 60% of the way through the game. And he's just alone on the battlefield, this hulking son of a bitch who's just put you through so much grief, and just because he's just a dick. And he's got this massive fucking sword, and your armies are like, yeah, we can get him! And so you're controlling, and you've got all these armies, and you're just sending the armies at this one man. Uh-huh. And you watch him just take him out. One guy. Like, it takes like five or six armies before you can finally get him. It's something.
Sounds very interesting.
And yeah, it's cool because he's the big bad. He's so, you know, simple. But when you take him out, you're like, oh, game's over, right? No, there's like 40% of the game left. It continues. After you've done that, like, he took over all six kingdoms or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he just spread this big empire of evil, and you take it out. Well, everything then collapses, and all of the old rulers still exist. So then there's all this crazy political struggle. So, okay, people saying, power, this is mine.
No,
this
power
is mine.
Vacuums.
Yeah, so the aftermath is what you really have the real struggle with afterwards. Mm-hmm. And it's super well written.
Well, guys, thank you for...
I'm surprised we managed to make an hour 42 out of that.
Thank you for your input. And thank you to all our listeners. If you would be so inclined, please like us on Facebook. I should have mentioned at the beginning.
God damn it.
Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/pixelchickenpodcast. Follow us on Twitter. That's @pixel_chicken. Send us your email, pixelchickenpodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next week.
Peace.